Welcome to Help from Future Self.
Hey, Archons. Welcome to Help from Future Self, the conversational KeyForge podcast by and for KeyForge friends. We are coming at you again hot off of a vault tour experience where Sydney got to share all her excitement through sound bites. And I don't know if you noticed, but you got two episodes last week as a result. So if you did not realize that, you should go listen to both because they're both a lot of fun. And it was a great insight into the community in many different ways. But we got an action-packed episode today with a lot of hot takes and a lot of great conversation coming your way, discussions to be had. But before we dive into it, I know Sydney has some news to share. So Sydney, why don't you take it away?
Awesome. So as we're recording right now, the Master Vault is almost at 3 million decks. So at this moment in time, we are 528 decks away from having 3 million registered decks on the Master Vault. So if it does happen where while we're recording it hits 3 million, then I'll let you on. I'll interrupt what we're doing. Just like when the GameFound campaign hit $1 million and Christian was like, woohoo, I will keep people updated. But even so, the cooler news is that now that more people are getting their deliveries of GameFound pledges, a Grim Reminder spoiler that was signed by Richard Garfield has been found out in the wild that isn't one of the ones that has already been found. So it is a completely new card, and it's really exciting that this one has been discovered. This person didn't even know that it was special or that they got something that wasn't otherwise like just came to everyone. The card is Hallowed Eve Festival. It has a pip and it says play. Discard the top five cards of your deck. For each Geistoid card discarded this way, a friendly creature captures one. So really exciting that Grim Reminder spoiler is out in the wild and that it's been discovered. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, totally. I saw that today too on the Facebook and I was like, all right, that's let's go. I didn't even know that was a thing. So that's really cool. Now, let's get into the meat and potatoes of this episode because, this is interesting. There's no other way to put it. What we got to say is this is going to be different from past episodes for sure. We're going to first start off things by letting Sydney tell us about her experience being at the Vault Tour from a playing experience and seeing what was around with certain things because there were some interesting things that came to light with a high-level tournament being executed. And of course, we're talking about double elimination. So Sydney, explain how double elimination came to be kind of a interesting way of approaching a tournament setting and both in the alliance that you personally experienced and what you know happened in other ways. Because you explained it to me before the episode and I was like, okay, that's kind of interesting that happens that way and also bizarre.
Absolutely. So I know I mentioned a couple times my experience at KFC, but it's funny that even at KFC, I didn't fully understand the experience until a lot of other people went through the same thing here at Philly. So basically, this is a bracket system that is, I think if I'm not mistaken, used in chess a lot. It is not very often used in formats for games like this. So what'll happen is you have a bracket and the bracket is always a multiple of two. And so it could be like 16, 32, 64, and you know, up like that. So what you want is the first round of a tournament is going to try and get people down to that magical multiple of two. For that to happen, the first round is going to pick random people to play each other so that half of them can enter the bracket and the other half can go down into the loser's bracket. And so then round two is basically the first round for a lot of people in the winner's bracket because they're in the winner's bracket because some of them didn't play. Some of them played, got their first win and stayed in the bracket. And the first round for the loser's bracket. If there is an odd number of people, that's when you get a bye. So the word bye is thrown around a lot, but you get a bye when you do not have an opponent. But what'll happen is in the loser's bracket, people play each other. Some people will get their second loss and they'll be out. And then in the winner's bracket, you play each other. And then if you win, you stay in the winner's bracket. You entering the loser's bracket means you are paired up with someone who's already in the loser's bracket. But depending on how many wins you get in the winner's bracket, the winner's bracket gets really far ahead of the loser's bracket because people have to finish their game in the loser's bracket and then find opponents that should be matched up with the person who enters the loser's bracket. So let's say you win 5 games in the winner's bracket. I think Devin did something like this. The winner of the Archon tournament in Philly, he won 5 or 6, I forget how many, and then he lost his first game in the winner's bracket and entered the loser's bracket. And he had to wait multiple rounds. The next round that he played in was something like round 10 because the loser's bracket had to play enough games to catch up to where he was so that his opponent could be matched to him.
Basically, what you're saying is you must play someone with the same record as you. And so if someone doesn't have the same record as you, you're waiting until that exists and then you will have your match.
Exactly. So what happens then is the fact that he had to wait a couple rounds in the past, like people threw around the word bye, but it's not actually a bye. He's not getting an opponent for these rounds. He's just not playing in these rounds. So he then waits until round 10, wins the match and moves on to day 2. So it was an interesting situation that Archon got to experience this weekend that not a lot of people appreciated.
Yeah, I definitely heard some things, and I honestly am not sure how you change that without completely changing this format. So I wonder if this will be a thing that we see go for the whole year, because they need to allow this to play out for this season and have that data that this was really the pain points, this happened. So I'm sure they can find ways to streamline the waiting process, but I don't think they can just suddenly be like, we're going to throw this out the window and switch the way we're doing this. I don't foresee that being a possibility. This is going to be one of those things where it's a growing pain. So they can make it more, I guess, informed about how long you're going to potentially be waiting for.
They can cushion the blow, but it won't make it better. Like the fact that like you didn't know how long you were waiting just also adds to the pain of, I can't do anything else while I'm here. I can't go anywhere else. I can't leave. I can't rest. I can't rep my deck. I can't enter a sealed pod. The fact that you had no idea was the worst part of it. But the problem is giving someone an idea doesn't necessarily make it better. Like, yes, you can probably get food or you can enter a sealed pod, but do you really want to start playing a different deck? If you're like playing high stakes round 10 to get to day 2, do you really want to like have a different deck enter your brain and be played a couple times before you go to play your like penultimate match? It's kind of hard to like say that, yes, they can make it better, but can they make it good enough? I agree with you. I do think that getting rid of this bracket system entirely may be the solution.
But I don't think it can be done until the season's over.
I hope you're wrong.
Do you suddenly decide in something that is creating a system where it's determining whether you're going to the penultimate event of Worlds when some people at the start played this way, and as you get near closer to it, some people are playing this way. It creates, I think, a situation where it feels unfair. So I think they have to allow this to play out, have this data, and then make a decision going into 2024. I really think that's the way this will have to play out. And people will just be now emotionally and mentally prepared for this to happen. But I also think that waiting around while other people are getting to constantly play it's like literally you're playing a sport and then saying like, hey, hold on. We're going to have your opponent stay warm and you're going to just cool off. So kudos to Devin for being able to stick with it and take the whole thing down. Like that seriously takes some skill. That shows why Flaming Hobo is such a ultimate Keyforge player, being able to do that. Cause that takes a lot of focus.
Absolutely. I do think this is going to hurt Ghost Galaxy. And I unfortunately might like be a part of that. Like at Gen Con, they're going to have 2 events. They're going to have Archon and Alliance on 2 different days. So it is possible for someone to play in both. And where I've been like gung-ho Alliance, I'm really excited to play Alliance. I like realized that Gen Con would be my only opportunity to play Archon this whole year. And unfortunately, what that means is if I play an Archon, not only will I have this same experience, but unless I lose 2 really early, which is, you know, a reason for me not to play in the first place, but I would have the same experience, one, at a convention where I can literally be doing a million other things, not only like hanging out with my KeyForge friends, but it's Gen Con. Like I go every single year. Like I could be playing other games. I could be hanging out with my con friends, or like Jerry on top for Ghost Galaxy. I could be at their booth demoing KeyForge. But like the reason that I have considered not playing in Archon is also because the only prizes are an invite to Worlds in the event that you win. So let's say like the sun shines down on me and I end up winning this whole thing at Archon, like my invite to Worlds would be in Archon. And I've been super excited and gung-ho and working really hard on my alliance this whole time. And that is the only prize. Like the fact that us going to these events is no longer giving us amber shards. We're not getting on a leaderboard. Like,
well, you get money too.
Not at Nationals. Not at Gen Con.
Oh, Nationals.
Literally
right.
Nothing but an invite to Worlds. So my Friday may in fact better be spent not playing KeyForge in the official event. Like that's so hard for me to say, but, and it's not like I'm doing this maliciously, and it's not like I've decided I need to like teach them a lesson and I need to not do this because it'll make them learn what they're doing is wrong. It's just,
no, it's just opportunity costs at the end of the day.
Exactly.
For you. If you're spending hours waiting around, those are hours you could be doing fun events somewhere.
Especially because I'm excited and going to play in the Alliance event on Saturday. So it's not like I'm not missing out on anything I want to do by not doing Archon.
You know what? I think that's very fair, Sydney. And I think looking at it from like that opportunity, the cost in an event like Gen Con, that makes sense. It's not like you're at a vault tour where you're there for KeyForge exclusively. There's other things to do. It's kind of interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how Gen Con actually is in general, because this is a Nationals. I think it's an interesting choice to choose Gen Con as Nationals, not being an exclusive. I mean, the last Nationals, which was at Nova back in 2019, was also at a convention similar like that. So it's not the first time they've done this. There's other things to do. I just think it's interesting to see how received it will be. I mean, there's the fact that people are already there, so more people could just enter because we're here, which may be a big part of the consideration for it, which would make sense from like a marketing standpoint and drawing people in. But I think this tournament thing is interesting.
I have been to conventions where I've played KeyForge, and I've been to Gen Cons before. Like I went to an Origins where that's where I top aided and sealed. Like I am happy and willing to dedicate my whole experience at a convention to KeyForge, but that's literally playing so many games in a day that like I'm meeting 100 people and I'm spending my time playing KeyForge. It would be awkward for me to have a round or two or three where I'm just standing around. Like, am I supposed to be scouting other people's games? Like, or can I get in a food really quick with my convention friends? Like, it's just also so unfortunate that this decision just is the right one for me.
Yeah. And honestly, the way that the tournament's going, you have a more Swiss style. It allows you to know that you're going to get at least six games, and no matter what happens, you get to play KeyForge with the deck you bring. So there's the value. I spent X dollars and I get to play this many games for that money. The good thing is in previous Vault Tours, there were side events, but they weren't exactly like you had to leave the tournament. Now you're in a position where you get to freely partake in them. It's going to cost you more money. That's just obviously you're buying decks and stuff. So you're getting product as well, which when it's really appealing right now when you can't get it anywhere else. But when we get further down the road, that's not necessarily the case. So it's very interesting in that sense. But I mean, there's some people who would rather just get to play six games and know that I got to play six games with this deck, because you can learn, there's so many things. You could use it as a testing. You could use it as a experiment for, hey, I want to try something out and let's see how my record went. And at what point down the bracket did I suddenly start pulling wins and things like that? So not having registered guaranteed KeyForge for your entry is interesting. It's like you're guaranteed two games. That's it.
Right. Well, and on top of that, you can plan around a Swiss event. Like I know I can tell my non-KeyForge friends, I will be ready for dinner by this time if I'm playing KeyForge for six games. And like if, let's say, I lose the first two and only want to play one or two more, I could be done at it like earlier than normal, rather than playing the same amount of games over a scattered period of time. And losing is like losing one game is not a death knell But losing one game is a mindset switch, because losing one game puts you into this like chaotic losers bracket, and you'll see what happens.
I mean, it's almost like a weird form of Survivor. Like, you know, that's what it is. I don't mean Survivor the game show. I mean like the format Survivor.
Sorry, I totally went to Survivor the game show.
I was like, I don't think that was that funny. She must be thinking the game show. But I mean, it's true. I guess you could make that parallel. But there's just the fact that it's like you're playing Survivor, except you don't have two decks. You only have one deck that can lose twice. That's what it's like. They might as well make this Survivor. Like, I think people would like it more almost. Survivors are great. It's one of my favorite formats. I think it's such a fun format. So, yeah, let's get on to the next topic, which is, I think, the one that everyone really wants to be hearing and talking about, because, I mean, you and I both had to mute one of our channels because it was just crazy, the discussion going on there. I literally opened it up to say since, I think it was maybe like 11 o'clock in the morning, and my thing said, since 8 a.m., there's been 150 plus messages. And I was like, what?
Yeah, that's new for our Discord.
Yeah, and these were for future topics. So I guess here we are. We're not really going to address everything that was said there, but we're basically talking about this because now we're in a future episode from when the discussion, and we are addressing this topic from our standpoint. And we actually have the benefit of having two really interesting parts in this. One, Sydney was there. She received a Vault Tour deck. I was in Canada at home with the extreme case of FOMO for so many reasons. It wasn't even the Vault Tour deck. So this allows us to have a nice, robust discussion because I'm someone who did not get to have them and Sydney did get to have one. And my first thought to you, Sydney, is this is a two-part question. Okay, so everyone don't get too excited right away with the way Sydney responds because there's a part B. So first part of the question, Sydney, when you found out you were getting this deck and you started to understand what this deck was, what was your initial reaction?
I'm not going to lie, but I was excited to a level at which was higher than a lot of the other excitement I'd experienced yet so far, because the kinds of stuff that could be possible in this deck, when it was presented to us, the initial like telling us we were going to get it, everyone sitting in that room had literally no idea what was inside of them until people started opening them around me and seeing, oh, this looks like Unchained because it has cards from multiple different sets. And I was like, oh, Unchained that are legal to play. I then immediately started thinking of all the Unchained I have opened and experienced and the kind of alliance decks that I could make with that. And then it crossed my mind that to make an alliance deck with this set, I would need to get my hands on multiples of these. And we were only given, I think we were given one and then later allowed to buy another one. So I only came home with two. And that may have been a limitation based on the issues they had flying stuff in. But I was thinking, how do I get my hands on more of these? Like, I want more of these. I'm going to get these at all the Vault Tours I go to, and I'm going to make the best deck ever. Like, this is going to be so cool. I'm really excited to see what I can do with this. That was my initial reaction. My initial reaction was extraordinary positivity because it was in my hands in front of me.
All right. Now, here we are days later. The community exploded in outrage, probably the most outrage we've seen within the game since its inception, I would say. There's no doubt about it. And it was unanimous. And the from me as an onlooker from the outside, I think it literally went down to this. You got the deck, or you knew you were going to an event soon, so you would get a deck. You were happy. You knew that you were prohibited in getting a deck in some way. You were outraged. You had everything to say. And that's literally the way it went. If you knew you were going to get a deck, you didn't be like, there was not, everyone was like, this is a bad idea. You were excited because you were going to be able to have this. And I think the one thing about this that we can circle was the phrase that these are tournament legal. That was the key sticking point, really, at the end of the day. If these weren't tournament legal and they were just cool, fun, casual decks you had, no one would care to the level that they do. That's what it is. That's literally the main sticking point. So now, Sydney, here's the second part, because I told you guys to just calm down before you wanted to come at Sydney, maybe for being excited. How are you feeling now that you're seeing the impact this has had on our community?
So I had to extrapolate, like if I take a step out of my own body and look at the excitement of me having it, and then you realize that like other people also are looking at the excitement of me having it and not having it. And the idea that this is accessible to me and not accessible to everyone else, it soured the whole thing. I could say things like, the ones I got aren't that good. Or I could say things like, well, go to a vault tour. But that doesn't solve the problem. Like, it doesn't make it better that they did this.
There's two things I have to launch on this. One is KeyForge has been defined by how inclusive it is. That has been one of the defining properties of this game. It's so inclusive. This has made it less inclusive. That's one. Two is, for a community that has stood together for so long, we are now divided, which has never happened. This didn't happen in a pandemic. During a pandemic, we came together when you could be the most divided. It didn't happen. We came together. This divided the community aggressively and literally made people not like Americans. Like, actually. Like, that's actually what happened. There were some comments that were kind of like, whoa, like, let's take this out of this. Like, people saying things like, that is an American thing to say. Like, that's like, that is, I mean, and fair enough. It is because you're in America and you got to have this. Like, that it's not exactly like you're in a position where you have something that other people don't, and you don't understand it because you have it, or you understand that you will have it shortly. And that's fine. Like, and to be clear, when I heard this, my reaction, and this is still my thought, is these are absolutely so cool. Like, these decks are incredible. They're so cool. You can't deny that. If they weren't, people wouldn't feel this strongly about it. That's the truth. If there are whatever meta decks, people wouldn't care. It's the fact that they are so cool and so exclusive.
Absolutely. Like, what I was trying to justify, the things that I was telling myself and others, is the fact that Ghost Galaxy is making this really cool thing. They have the idea of what, like, people want in mind. And maybe, yes, they're sure they're messing up on distribution, but like, they're making a thing so awesome that people want it. And so it must be good. But the thing is, their distribution is actually hurting people. The decision to release it the way that they've released it is making people not want to go to these things because they're deciding that.
It's like a boycott almost.
Right. I do think there are changes they can possibly make. Like, unlike double elimination, like, this isn't set in stone. This isn't something that they've said wouldn't change. So there is the possibility, like, I'm hoping maybe there are things they can do to make this better.
And we'll get to that, because you and I had a discussion about things that made me feel like I should maybe be on the Ghost Galaxy marketing team. But, you know, that was just my own thoughts. But the thing that I want everyone to hear me very clearly now is to understand the true feelings that this can cause. In North America, we are in a different place than other countries. And this is a global community. So I listened to the NKFL podcast about, I think it was, why vault tour decks are bad. And you can actually understand the pain from their perspective. And I'm actually blessed, because even though I'm in Canada and haven't got my GameFound pledge yet, it's going to be coming next week. We all got our notifications now. So everything's going great. And we're on the far side of the map from where they're shipping. So I did get a display of woe thanks to a generous benefactor. And as a result, I know what it feels like to play. But the thing that they said, their points being over where they are and in an international community outside of North America, were very salient and very much, I think, hitting the nail on the head. So the point that really hit this home for me was that there are far less vault tours in Europe, and Europe is bigger. There is more countries. There is more, like, I mean, it's easier to travel in Europe, that you could say that. But the truth is, there's a wider array of countries within Europe and the rest of the world. Like, think about Australia, for example. Like, that's probably not even in consideration. So, and a flight from Australia to anywhere else is very, very difficult to do. Like, that is cost prohibitive to the nth degree.
And can I also say, like, a weird thing that maybe not a lot of people have taken into consideration is that, so the Florence Vault Tour in Italy is in October. And if by October they have put into place their language rules, where you can only have a deck that is either in English or the language of origin, because let's say you can make copies by then, that is requiring people who have their French decks, their German decks, their Spanish decks, like decks in different languages, to either get copies made or not play them in the Florence Vault Tour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I foresee that being a 2024 rule. I hope so, at least. But the thing they said that actually hit home the strongest to me, this was the one point, was that there is a new set to be excited about. And they literally threw that out the window and gave something else that's even more exciting. You just diminished your own product. Like, that is wild. Like, and it's cool. Like, the only way that, and this was when we, Sydney and I, were brainstorming ways that you could have solved this, is what could have been the best way so that everyone was like, at least we all have one, is this was, you remember when you signed up, you got one deck of something and they said it was going to, you didn't know what it was going to be. You could have made it one of these. And that way everyone has, and you say, guess what, folks, if you come to a Vault Tour in 2023, you can get more of these. So then everyone has one. So you just took away the feels bad of no matter where you are, you don't have one. And you just created that everyone who backed the game found has one. And if you go to a Vault Tour, you can get more. And you know, like, this is awesome. I like it. I can get more. I think that would have been a very simple solution. You would have solved a lot of things and you would have probably had more people. I mean, you could have made it a surprise, which would have been the case. But it's, you just released a new set. When you just released a new set, that's actually what just happened. That point was the most, like, mind blowing for me when I listened to NKF.
That people don't have their hands on yet. Like, so you've just Correct. Released a new set where people don't have their hands on the most recent new set that you released. Like, that actually was what hit home to me the most, is that, like, they still don't have Woe. Like, I'm over here, like, trying to grapple with my feelings about Vault Masters decks, and they still don't have Winds of Exchange. And so, like, the fact that I came back from this Vault Tour, like, oh my gosh, so much Woe made it so high and it's so awesome. And I'm going to start, like, iterating on my Alliance Woe already. There are people that haven't touched a Winds of Exchange deck yet. And so, like, that really does bring down the excitement. It, like, it's like a wet blanket over the whole thing, because what is it that they're doing to the poor people in the community that are, like, the NKFL is one of the largest leagues in Keyforge right now, like the online league. It's like as big as ABR, like as big as some of us think ABR is. Like, it's the same to people who have been playing Keyforge and are into the game and love this game as much as we do and put as much work and time and effort. Like, I have chatted with Zeramis, the amount of games that he has played on TCO against himself to prep his Hexad for NKFL. It's amazing. He's played more games that way than I have played on TCO, period. And he doesn't even have Woe, let alone this new set that I just got my hands on.
Yeah, that point was the one that I felt the pain. Like, I had a feeling in the pit of my stomach, like, whoa, like, I didn't think of it from that perspective. And that was the one that really hit home for me, that I was like, okay, this, that is kind of, you know, and the truth is, if you take away Vault Tour legal aspect of it, that these are just a promo deck that you get to have and play with your friends in a casual thing, and you can go against Unchained, I think you remove a lot of it. It's the people who are really competitive and want to play. That's the thing. And another solution I was thinking of about this is, what if you made Vault Tour 23 decks only legal in the year of 2023?
Ooh.
So they weren't infinite. You could play them in tournaments, but you get to get them in Vault Tours. You can play in Vault Tours, but once the season's over, you can't use these decks anymore. So they have a finite period of time of which their legality exists. And that way, if anything, like, because these for sure were not tested to the degree sets were. Like, I mean, they're tested in the sense that all the cards are known, but the composition of cards coming together are not known necessarily the same way. So you don't know if, oh, we shouldn't have these together. And if you made it so that, yeah, you can only play within the year of the Vault Tour, they make them a really fun thing that you can utilize within the year and people can play them. And if you think about it, people are bringing decks to Vault Tours that they've had since 2018, potentially.
Absolutely.
So there's years of testing and reps, but this gives you, it kind of means the time you can get into these decks are not the same as other decks that are legal and have a evergreen format to them. I think that would be a really nice way where you don't have to change the fact that these are Vault Tour legal. You don't have to change that statement because people have played them at Vault Tours, obviously. I mean, I joke to you that if I went to the Vault Tour, I would have literally opened up like, this is awesome, I'm playing it tomorrow just to throw everyone off. Like, I would have been that person. So I think that's a nice way to create, okay, you can still do what you've already done, maybe, but right. And when the year's over, you can't do that again. And then when the 24 comes out, they can revisit this idea because you can change the rules at that point. because you, this are set of rules for this year's promo decks, and next year's promo decks could be a little bit different. And I think that would be an elegant solution where you don't diminish what's already happened, but you prevent this from being something that carries on into the future. That was my favorite solution that I came up with in my head.
You're right. Like, one of the things we were chatting about earlier, simply the fact that a larger initial release would have probably quelled a lot of people's unrest right now, but that's the past that can't be fixed. But going forward, like, some sort of limitation or restriction on how these can be played, even if, let's say, these decks aren't amazing. And like, the one really, really good deck that's been circling around the internet is the only one that's ever going to be that good. And it would just happen to be found, you know, like, let's say these decks aren't that good. The initial reaction is really what matters. And the fact that, like, people perceive these decks now as being highly powered, but also the fact that they are coveted. Like, if I can be a collector and still want these, as well as a competitive player and still want these, that's what matters. So it's definitely just, there's still things that can be done. Like, this one isn't set in stone, so they aren't going to be at Gen Con. That has been confirmed. They are not going to be at Gen Con because Gen Con's a nationals, not a vault tour.
All right. The last thing I want to bring up from the NKFL is they mentioned talking about the energy that was put into these when other things weren't done as a pain point. Like, the fact that why wasn't the local organized play had the energy put into it instead of something like this? I thought that was an interesting point because we've had discussions about this where I thought that the local infrastructure is more important than a vault tour infrastructure. Because that's what will actually over time grow the game so that you will get more people coming to a vault tour. And you know what the truth is? Maybe that piece is so much greater. That could be the reason. Like to develop a proper organized play for stores, it's huge. Like it's a really big task and it's got a lot of moving pieces to it. And that's why that couldn't be done, where vault tours are more insulated. It's easier to do things around those. And that's why it brings the community together in a large group. You're traveling there. You're getting to interact with a large group of people and share your excitement. Maybe that's why they made those decisions. I feel like we've been hard for good reason this episode, but that could be some of the ideology.
I also think that, so this is a place where I can, in fact, like, throw a little bit of my positivity in there. I did meet their newest member of the Ghost Galaxy team, Josh, who was literally hired to be their OP person. And so I know that Jeremy's been taking a lot of that on his shoulders recently. And he even, like, he was the voice you heard when I recorded the official announcements. And he was basically, like, in charge of and running the Philly Vault Tour. But now that they have a whole new employee specifically there for OP, like, not only can he run all the Vault Tours and get that off Jeremy's plate, but he can also start getting things in place for people to play at stores and, like, do really cool things. And I think that that's going to actually, taking those responsibilities and separating them also means that Jeremy can get back to the PR and marketing of Keyforge, so that we can do, as the community, we can do less of the work getting people into the game because it'll go back to Ghost Galaxy's plate. And then we, the community, can do less of the work trying to get local OP together because that can go on to Josh. So I do like want to throw this hopeful tidbit in here, even though it's near the end of the episode, of like, even though these issues are bad and they should be dealt with, there is hope that the future direction of Keyforge is going to go in the right direction. Like, it's not that these things shouldn't be fixed. It's the fact that now I think they might even have the capacity to do so.
Yeah. And as someone who, I do hiring and I have to hire sometimes key people, when you're doing that, you actually don't rush your key people. You take more time because the amount of resources that have to be put into getting them to the place where you want them to execute their role at the level, you need to find the right person to do that because you don't want to have to then let someone go, or they were only there temporary, and then start all over again with the process of getting them on board and understanding the vision. And so maybe this is part of this is, getting Josh was the right person, and it took time to get the right person. And now that they have it, they can be given that task of, let's get the store level organized play going. At least this is my hope. But I do know from my own standpoint, having to hire people like this, it's a big thing. And to rush it for the sake of, we're lacking this right now and we just need to get it filled, is not always the right way. You're going to end up going back to square one and maybe even behind because there is work done that now has to be undone. I feel like we saw that with FFG. It was very much
right.
forward and backwards with stuff. And it felt inconsistent. Maybe this was finding the right person who's going to take this over and move us forward. So, Josh, sorry for putting all this pressure on your shoulders just now, but we have high hopes for you in all the best ways. So let's see how this ends up being addressed, because this does need to be addressed. There needs to be a statement that is brought out based on what happened and acknowledged at the very least in some capacity. To ignore this, I think, would be a bit of an oversight from many different areas. I mean, we're normally pretty positive, but something like this that has caused so much division and something that has been so united, it's not a good thing. So we'll see how it moves forward and what is going to be the response. But don't rush the response, because I think a time taken to have a properly measured response is more important than just getting an acknowledgement right away, because this needs to be a measured response to something that has created such a vast division.
Their response to KFC, their article that came out after KFC was actually so good that I'm hoping that they put that kind of time and effort into however they're going to like summarize the Philly Vault tour, even if it includes like blurbs at the bottom of like, we are addressing X, Y, and Z issue, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. But I think we got some stuff to give away, Sydney. So let me pass it over to you to announce some prizes to be given away.
The first thing we're giving away is the Grim Reminders preview cards and Officer Moon figurine. And that winner is Daniel Zalatara from Australia. Congratulations. And prize number two is the Fuzzy Gruen and One Woe deck. And that winner is Ian Johnson, who is coming to Gen Con. So let me know if you want me to give it to you there. Congratulations. And the last prize we're giving away is the Dusk Runner figurine and a Woe deck. And that winner is Tim Wilhelms.
All right. Well, congrats to all the winners. And of course, we cannot end an episode without our titular segment. And we call this
Help from Future Self. Future Self.
Sydney, I understand you got one, of course, from just entering a vault tour. You must have lots of wisdom to impart on your future self and all our listeners.
Absolutely. So I'm not going to cop out and give the one where I whiffed in my fifth game of Alliance, but I'm still going to make this slightly Alliance based. So I am looking to upgrade. I think I might've mentioned this before. I'm looking to upgrade my Logos pod and see if it possibly has some things in it that will bring my deck to the next level. And one of those things is ZYX Researcher, which at the moment is one of the only cards that touches your discard pile, but we know that that's coming with Grim Reminders. And so I think that one of the things, like my help from Future Self, now that I've been practicing with a card that is specifically touching my discard pile and TCO not taking me seriously when I want the other card, is that we are going to have to... Yeah, if you manual it, yeah. But
well, you can uncheck for ZYX and it tells you what it lets you go what order. I actually had, or for Igor, you mean?
Is what you're no, thinking. No, ZYX Igor. Researcher, where you archive the top card of your discard pile.
So when you go Igor, you can choose the order things go in.
Oh.
I discovered this very recently and it is amazing. Help from Future Self. Guess what? You can do this.
Well, yeah. So one of the things that I've realized now, trying this out in person once or twice, is that you need to order your discard piles a lot more than you think you do. Like if you board wipe once, you are ordering your discard pile and your opponent's discard pile. Like once the discard pile becomes a thing that happens in every game because of the Grim Reminders, like you are going to have to decide, like it's going to be a bigger decision space, the order that your discard pile goes in. So I'm really interested to see how like that affects a larger group of decks, even though like I've been making sure to remind myself of it now using this single card that touches the discard pile.
All right. I like it. All right, folks. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. This was as heated as we get here at Health and Future Self.
I know, but, right?
Yeah, we I don't know. It was a weird thing in the community. I've never seen it before, and it was a little scary, to be honest. Like this is something I've seen in other card games, and I didn't think we would get here. like this. So I was a little nervous about this one. I think we will come out of it because we are the community that we are. We are just in the place of this just happened. It's very fresh. That's the truth. So everyone out there who's in the Discords feeling some kind of way, both in the receiving and non-receiving end of VT decks, maybe just step away, I think, right now. I think that these debates have hit a point where everyone is saying things and everything has been said, and people feel there's going to be no conclusion of one person's right, one person is wrong, no matter which side you are on. Step away from these discussions. Start focusing on things that you are in control of and that make you enjoy the game more, because so far, this is not one of them. We need to see a response. So until then, I don't think you need to be a soundboard for one another, just going back and forth.
And if you feel like you do need to take action, I will say, one, have empathy for the people that you talk to on the Discord, and two, Ghost Galaxy's feedback form. That's really going to be the best way to get your voice heard.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So thanks everyone for listening for this week. You know where to find us. We got links in the show notes to all the places you can get in touch with us if you'd like to share some of your thoughts. And guess what? We'll see you next week. So stay forged.